Welcome to Three Steps Forward, a podcast designed to help us grow as Jews, just a few steps at a time. In each episode, we will meet one interesting and thoughtful person with one or two pieces of useful advice to give. Our goal is to be both spiritually ambitious and humble. We really believe that we can accomplish great things if we take it just a few steps at a time. I am sitting here with Rabbi David Katz, the Dean of Mechlelet Mevaseret Yerushalayim, the world-famous MMY, where many, many wonderful students go on to grow in Torah and in Yirat Shamayim, and the awe of God, the reverence of the Creator. And first of all, Rabbi Katz, thank you so much for your time. It's really nice of you to sit down with me.
My pleasure. This is an honor.
Thank you so much. So I just want to know, here you are, molding young, unbelievable human beings who are going to lead the world and just be fabulous, and you're developing hearts and minds. It's a really beautiful thing that you do. I just want to know, can you give us just one piece of advice in serving God? Just one thing.
Wow. Okay. I'm actually going to play off what you just said, Rabbi. You said, I believe the exact quote is, developing hearts and minds. In the world we live in, hearts and minds, quite often, maybe even most often, don't go together. It's a very binary kind of system. Either you develop in your heart, and you know what I mean, spirituality, singing, close your eyes, emotional, inspirational moment, and the mind, rightly so, is considered this very cerebral, that's learning, education, informational, doesn't necessarily inspire unless you're a very intellectual person, and then it's still not inspiring, but that's what fuels you. And that's an error. And it's an error, I think, that if we want to grow in our Avodat Hashem, so that's my tip, is to bridge the heart and the mind. Now, how do we go about doing that?
How indeed?
There you go.
I would like to know.
I figured you would ask. And to be honest, I think it starts with understanding how the mind bone is connected to the heart bone. Okay, so how are they connected? Well, if you are studying, let's say, math, and you know everything about math and the Pythagorean theorem, and you've got and the A squared and the B squared and the C squared, all of that. Now, if you are inspired by the wonder of mathematics, more power to you, and that's wonderful. But let's say now you're studying Torah. And anyone who has really studied Torah and sat and gotten into the depths of Torah, it's math on steroids. It's like every possible thing that you could want intellectually, it's all there. But that doesn't necessarily make it inspiring unless you study something that... But that kind of inspiration is beautiful, and we should have it. I'm not taking that away. But it doesn't last. But if you understand that Torah, as opposed to math, you're reading God's book. God left us a book. And when I'm studying it, I'm not just studying the information in my brain, but God is giving me a window into godliness. So whatever it is that I'm studying, it might even be something that is so, it might be A squared, B squared plus B squared equals C squared, you know, whatever that is. But God built his world this way. This is, and if I can dive into that, that God left me a book. I'll give you the analogy that I often will use. You want to get to know the most famous character in the Holocaust. And I could ask your audience to poll, I can predict, but statistics show the most famous character, I should ask you, Rabbi, who's the most famous character in the Holocaust? Put you on the spot.
I'm sorry to say, I think it's Hitler.
Okay, let's go to a Jewish character in the Holocaust.
Okay, you gotta, I might edit that
okay,
out.
You'll edit that out, but okay, it's all
the
good.
The most famous...
Like in the world, like Holocaust equals... Okay, well, it's Anne Frank.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's Anne Frank. Her diary is published in a million languages, the whole thing. It's Anne Frank.
How many people say Elie Wiesel?
Very few.
Really?
You can get Viktor Frankl. It's Anne Frank. In the world, in the global world, not just in our little bubble. It's Anne Frank. Now, I'm very inspired by Anne Frank and her story and her diary, etc. So I decide I really want to get to know Anne Frank. Like, I really want to get into this study of Anne Frank. Well, there's three ways to do that. One way is to go to her museum. There's an Anne Frank Museum. It's in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. I've been there. It's wonderful. Sure. You see the annex and the tree that she writes about behind the... And you really get a feeling and a sense. So going to the museum, the second way, which you can't do anymore, but in a few years back you could. You want to talk to people who knew her. So if you could interview Meep, that was a great opportunity when her father was alive. And really, someone who's met her in real life and not just in her book... But she left us a book, and it's been translated. So you don't need to be an expert in Dutch. It's in English. So just read her book. It's a great start. And obviously, you add the other pieces, but my God, she left us a book. How could you understand anything about Anne Frank without first reading her diary? The same thing is true about Torah. You can go to God's museum. That's Israel, and you can hike, and you can see. That's wonderful, and I encourage all of your wonderful congregants to come join us in Israel, too. But and you can develop relationships with our rabbis and mentors who perhaps understand God on a different level. They've really... But, oh, my God, he left us a book. And it's also been translated. So let's read the book. And that's the mind, because it's learning. But understand, you're reading God's book. And connect, and what is the message in there for me, and what is it telling me? And to me, if I can do that, and I can understand what I'm doing, and understand the beauty of Torah study, all the other stuff is important, but if I had to give you one, you forced me into one rabbi, one tip, it's learn Torah, but don't just learn it as an intellectual exercise. Understand that you get a window into God, and we shouldn't take that for granted.
So, first of all, Shkoyach, thank you, I love that. My follow-up question is, are you coming from a place where you're saying or positing some form of the Pintel Yid that every Jew loves Hashem? And so if I tell you to learn Torah because you want to get to know God better, that's something you're going to connect with because you love God. Of course you love God, right? Or are you saying this is a natural state of human affairs? Is this something... it's not a natural state of human affairs necessarily in the sense of breathing, but it's natural in the sense of ice cream. Everybody likes ice cream, right? You know, what's the idea over there? What's driving this? Why is this so compelling?
So I'm pulling a page out of Maimonides. That's my upbringing in general, and I can't say that everyone is a Maimonides type thinker.
I mean, he's a classic. He's pretty good.
But he's pretty good.
Yes.
And he says the
five stars routinely.
Five stars. He says the following. One of the first commandments in his list, he lists the 613. So the very first commandment in the Rambam's list is the commandment to love God. I know you say that everybody loves God, yet, and this is a debate between Maimonides and Nachmanides, actually, on whether this makes sense. In the end, Nachmanides even agrees to Maimonides. How can you command somebody... an emotion if you don't, either you love them already or you don't, meaning.
Yeah.
So without going into that, Maimonides says there's a commandment, you must love God. But since you can't command an emotion, there must be something that creates, fulfills that commandment. So again, it's very Maimonides. Maimonides says you fulfill the mitzvah of loving God by learning his book. Why? And then he explains. He says, because when you learn God's book, you understand his ways. You understand his values. You might think that you love God, but if they're not godly values, then you don't love God, you love those values, which in our Western world is usually pretty much aligned, and that's beautiful. But the priorities, what the more you study, the value system, and again, the more depth you go into in Talmud study, like it really, it's endless, Torah study's endless, but you study Torah in order to get to know the Creator, and by getting to know the Creator, it brings you to see just the absolute greatness of God. Now, you can do that through secular study also, mind you. You can study biology and learn how the human body is just the most incredible thing, that everything works and the way it works and everything else like that, and come to love God through that too. I'm not negating other studies, and for some people, you go hiking on a beautiful mountain, You look at the vistas of Houston, Texas, you know, it's not an ugly city, Baruch Hashem, right? Thank God. So I've been there. And you can come to love God that way also. And the miracles of the Jewish people and the reborn state of Israel, and you fill in any way that you like. But again, read his book. And according to Maimonides, that's how you fulfill the mitzvah of loving God, through an intellectual approach. Now, again, that's not necessarily automatic for everyone. But again, you asked me for one tip.
Yeah. Okay, so love itself over here, the inner experience of love of God, is, it sounds to me, different than the love, perhaps, of a spouse or a friend, because it's a deeply intellectual love from this perspective.
So, again, intellectual is spiritual if done properly, and I was gonna cut you off, I'm glad I didn't. About that analogy, because I was going to say, and you know what? As I'm thinking about this, it's exactly like the relationship of a spouse.
Now, okay,
you'll say how.
Yeah.
When you love someone, allegedly, that you really don't know,
yeah.
Like, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
first
yeah, yeah.
date or based
sure.
on externals,
sure.
and I'm in love.
Yes.
We have a name for that. It's called infatuation.
Yeah.
Real love.
Yeah.
As opposed to teenage love, let's say, and this is, I'm talking to my students now who are teenagers.
Sure.
I'll tell you with a story, actually. I was dating a girl, this goes back a long time ago. I was of dating age, I was in college. I was dating a girl, I really thought I was gonna marry this girl. I loved her, there was no question about it. Long, long story. And then, right when I was, and we've all been through this, you know, we went out to a fancy dinner, and I bought her a necklace,
oh, wow.
and it said someone special. Like, I wasn't going to give her a necklace that said I love it, over the top. Anyway, and I had it all set up, and it was meant, we're now ready to upscale this relationship.
Sure.
Anyway, she took the necklace, took one look at it, and dumped me.
No.
She dumped me. It was the worst moment of my life, right? Totally dumped me. And how is my life ever going to go on? And I love this woman and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I went into a depression, as I'm sure, you know, many of us have been, us men at least, when you go through this.
Yeah.
And what do you do when you're depressed? You run away. I tried everything. Nothing worked. I was a mess. So, and we had been going out, you understand, for a very, very, very long time. It was 6 weeks. Right? But then, to me, it was a world, right? So I called a mentor, one of my rabbis. We went out to Hojo's. Anybody who remembers those days when Howard Johnson's existed and they were and the ice cream was kosher and all that, we went to Hojo's in Paramus, New Jersey. And this was the 80s, so tough love. It's not like now where you have to sit there and empathize, right? Then it was the tough love.
I hope you're not going to tell me he hit you.
He didn't physically hit me, but his words of comfort were like, love, you're an idiot. You think you love her, but you can't compare love before marriage to love after marriage. And anyone who's married understands that what we thought was love was infatuation, a bond, but you really only can really love someone when you really know them. And therefore, I think it is. You can go to a very inspiring, whatever, a kumsitz and a this and a that and a or any of the other things, the mountain and the hike. And there's a reason it doesn't last. You think it's love, but it's infatuation. And I'm not downplaying that. Those things are very important. Infatuation is not a bad thing as long as you know that it's infatuation and then you continue to build it. But we're not trying to build infatuation with God here and there. We're Avodat Hashem is serving God. Why would I want to serve God? Why would I want to serve anyone? We're not slaves. What does it mean to serve? You have to really love someone to give of yourself on that level, like a spousal relationship. So we're not trying to create boy-girl relationship with God. We're trying to create, in essence, and in the Bible, in Tanakh, in the Bible, we have this imagery all the time, the Dod and the Re'ah, as Shir HaShirim, we just read it on Pesach, on Passover. It's that relationship is a metaphor for our relationship with God, along with father and teacher and all the other, and warrior and all the other things that God, but something that we can relate to is the same way that you love a spouse is that kind of relationship, obviously not the physical relationship, but the emotional relationship of love. And you can't love someone unless you know their quirks, you just know them. So that's my one tip.
Rabbi David Katz, a lot in there. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My honor, my pleasure.
Wow, you should cough. Thank you.
Here you go. Go Astros.
Thank you very much. Yeah, why not? Go Astros.
Thank you so much for taking 3 steps forward with me. There is a wide and bright horizon ahead. Please review our podcast, and if you learned something new, share it with a friend. More episodes are on the way.